G'day everyone. Is another weekly update from home, which is really, really nice. As much as I did love traveling around, having a little bit of consistency again is pretty nice. And to that effect, geez, I've had like one sip of the lightest beer I've had in a very long time. I'll talk about the beer in a moment. To that effect, I'll talk about a little bit of normal back to life stuff in a moment as well. I just posted nice little jet ski photos. Sponsor first before I jump into all the other things. 1Password is there in the sponsor bar again today. I don't think by now 1Password actually needs an introduction of any kind. I think I figured I'd passed, was it my 10th or my 11th anniversary of using 1Password? I don't know, many, many years, double digit, which in this industry is a very long time. So yeah, good on 1Password for being out there and helping us keep those passwords a little bit secure. We'll come back and talk more about passwords today as well. So I mentioned a couple of things in terms of getting back to normal. I did get out on the jet ski again today. It must be more than 2 months since I've been jet skiing. So I posted some photos probably only about half an hour ago. We took a little jet ski out on the Broadwater here. So the Broadwater is sort of like it's like an inland waterway. It is tidal. It opens out into the ocean. You can cruise out to the ocean from there as well. Went to the sort of little seafood place there. Got takeaway prawns and oysters, not shrimp. So Australia, we don't call them shrimp because they're not tiny things. You'll see the photo of a good sized tiger prawn there. So I sat down there, ate some prawns, and then I was cruising back and I'm looking at all the warnings on the jet ski. So this is how much fun jet skis are, right? Like there's this massive list of warnings here, but the one that always gets me is this particular line. And I just tweeted this as well. So if you want to read like everything you've got to be careful of when riding a jet ski, look at it. So this line says, "Wear protective clothing. Severe internal injuries can occur if water is forced into body cavities as a result of falling into water or being near jet thrust nozzle. Normal swimwear does not adequately protect against forceful water entry into lower body openings of males or females." Fun day out. So you're like sitting there reading that and going, oh, what could go wrong? But it was good fun. In fact, that it was almost good fun, except for the bit where I got like mildly electrocuted multiple times because my winch has eventually died. So one of the thing about a lot of the houses here is they are on the water. I think I've said before, we have more canals here on the Gold Coast than Venice and Amsterdam combined, which is just a massive, massive amount. So it must be 10,000 houses plus that are on the water here on the Gold Coast. And many of them do have a boat ramp. We've actually got like a little boat shed under the house, and there's a winch. So there's a little, like they call it a dolly, which is like a trolley. Jet ski sits on there, comes up out of the water, back into the water via an electric winch. And every now and then I'd gotten just like little zaps from this one. And then today I got a bigger zap and a lot of lights and things went out and I've decided that's dead. So no forced entry of water into cavities, but minor electrocution, which also wasn't great. So there's that. And I'm seeing the comments here as well. There's a comment here about amazing all that stuff on the label would have happened at some point for them to know or write about it. Yeah. So yeah, interesting. Have a read of that. Now, other things as well. Last week, I focused 100% on the Gab and Parler and deplatforming and Trump and free speech and all the rest of it. And I really wanted to only make it about that. And at the end of my list show, I'm going to talk about this again. But there was something I didn't talk about, and several people did actually raise it. I did announce that oh, geez, again, like a mouthful. I did announce that I got engaged whilst I was away on holidays. This was like task number one of 2021. So Charlotte and I got engaged on New Year's Day. Now, who knows when and where we will actually get married? Being Norwegian, she would have liked to have, maybe we would have gone there, maybe people there would have come here. I don't know. So we just got to wait and see what happens there. But we are enormously happy, and thank you for everyone last week that was saying congratulations. That's awesome. And yeah, maybe she'll be on one of these later on as well. Many people who work in my industry or know me also know her by virtue of her running the NDC conferences for all these years as well. So there's a long affinity there. So anyway, probably more on that another time. Now, the beer, I did mention the beer. So So this is because usually someone eventually says, what's the beer? Fortitude Valley Brewing. So they are actually set up the top of our mountain here, a place called Mount Tambourine. This one's a pacer. Now, it's called a pacer because it's about 2.8%. So very, very light. But it's kind of like nice post-jet ski weather, you know, when you're nice jet ski beer. When it's warm and you've had a little bit of a workout, trying not to get water thrust into your cavities, you know, this is a perfect drink for after that. Now, someone's asked a question here. Is your A6400, which, of course, is the Sony that I'm looking into at the moment, on the Elgato multi-mount or still on a small stand in front of the monitor? Been doing some based on your Ultimate Home Office blog. So it, at the moment, is on the Elgato multi-mount. So it's a little bit hard to sort of explain it, but the camera is on a tripod sort of mount, and then there's a little bit that goes out this way, and then it goes up that way, and then behind the monitor, and then down, and then eventually it's attached to the desk. It's good for what it is, but here's the problem, and I've been trying not to do this, but let me just wiggle my desk a little bit and see everything in the camera will start to wiggle. What I would actually like to do is get this mounted to the wall, because inevitably, like, I lean on the desk or something like that, so I'd like to get it mounted on the wall. I mean, I'm committed here. I'm not going anywhere. This is going to be my office for a very long time, so I'm okay drilling holes and things. So I think I'm going to get that mounted on the wall and just attach it from anything I can possibly bump. The other thing that I'm going to do, just in terms of like the follow-up to that whole Ultimate Home Office stuff, is I really want to work more on the sound deadening here. So that there's sort of two main things that are going to come up. The wall behind me, which for those watching the video rather than listening to the podcast, is basically just a flat painted wall. I would like to get some cool sound deadening stuff on there that looks kind of neat as well. Same for the wall in front of me as well. And then off to my left, there is a blind, which is a fairly kind of hard surface. So I'm thinking about getting some much sort of softer curtains on there too. So working a little bit on the sound, you really can't hear it through this mic because the mic I'm using is a really nice Rode Broadcaster mic. But I do hear fan noise when I sit and listen to it from mostly from the UPS, a little bit from the PC as well. So I do need to actually rotate that fan to something a little bit quieter as well. So all of this is just like one of these continual processes of ongoing improvement as well. And now Tom, he says he's always found the audio really good. It would be interesting to see how it changes. So what I found, Tom, is I was out walking the other day and I was listening to, I think I was listening to like the Risky Business podcast, and the sound's always just absolutely spot on. And then I flicked and I listened to this broadcast from last week, which occasionally I do, not because I want to sit there and really hear myself talk, but I'm just really interested to hear how the sound is different or my tone or my mannerisms. And I just felt that it was just that little bit hollow, like there's a little bit of an echo. So I think that there's more I can do to make small changes that will make, at least to my ear, a noticeable difference as well. And yeah, ring ring. I'll tell you what that was in just a moment. To the point here from Adventure Matt, we can't hear the fan noise. Yeah. So and this is the really nice thing about a decent microphone, and it's one of the things I really learned doing all those ProSight courses, is investing in the microphone pays off over and over and over again with all the post editing, because there's just so much other stuff. Everything like car noises outside. Certainly lower frequency, duller noises just seem to disappear. So that fan, I can definitely audibly hear, not enough to really bother me, but you can't hear it. That's because of the mic. Okay, so other things that are on here, and there are some dedicated InfoSec things, but a couple of other things that have come up recently which I think are interesting. I tweeted a video yesterday. In fact, I put a video on YouTube because it was several minutes long, of Turing Tumble. Now, Turing Tumble is the marble-powered computer. So when Christmas was coming up, I put out a tweet and I said, hey, look, what should I get the kids? My daughter's 8, my son's 11. I want to try and find them some cool presents that, you know, they're going to kind of learn something from as well. Like, I don't just want to get them video games or things like that. So the overwhelmingly most voted for thing was a game called Turing Tumble. Turing as in Alan Turing, and Tumble in that there's all these little marbles that you sit up across the top of it, and you really got to watch the video to see how this works. And there's little switches, for want of a better term, which you then place down a board, and then there's a lever, and you pull the lever, and all the marbles and things start to run down the board. And you have these goals to try and create patterns with the marbles. So you should have like red, blue, red, blue, red, blue, or all blue, and then no red, or whatever it may be. And you've got to figure out the right patterns of the switches to make it work. And both my kids at both 8 and 11 have been really getting into this, and it's really, really cool to watch them like debug it, because they put little switches on, then they're running their fingers down trying to see which way the balls will fall, and then they, air quoting again, run their code, see which way the marbles go. Inevitably, they've got some bugs here or there, so they have to fix those bugs by going through and changing where some of the switches are. So I just think it's really, really cool. I'm just sort of, as much as I love doing techie things with my kids, I really love it when they can do something just physical and hands-on. We spent most of Christmas Day like throwing stuff around the park, and okay, like we're flying drones too, but you know, a lot of like very physical active things, and Turing Tumble was great for that. And then when they weren't there, I played with it a lot myself. It's actually kind of cool. So definitely have a go at that. So yeah, Dubstar here says in the comments, I'm tempted to buy it for myself. Yeah, like if you don't have kids, it doesn't mean you can't get it, right? Like just go and get it and play with it. It was good fun. Now, another thing that that was relevant this week, and in fact, this just arrived today, it's my Lemetric. Now, a moment ago, there was what sounded like a bicycle ring. Now, what I'm holding in my hand here, and I'll explain it as well for people who just listen to the podcast, is it's a little device, probably about 20 centimeters long, maybe 7 centimeters high, little matte black finish, and it's almost like an 8-bit display on it with very rudimentary graphics, and it's just showing the time at the moment. But the value proposition of the Lemetric, do you say the Lemetric or just Lemetric? Anyway, the thing in my hand is that it can have a feed of data. Now, the time, yeah, not so interesting. More interesting is there's my current Twitter follower account. Oh, and that happened just at the right time. So you hear the ring ring and you see the count change. Now, just in case anyone would like to see this happen real time, if you either unfollow me or follow me if you don't, this should ring and the number changes. Now, this is going to be fun for about 5 minutes and then it's going to just completely drive me nuts. But the reason I got this is that I want to plug into other APIs that I'll write and show other things on here. So, for example, I was thinking of like the current notification user subscriber count for Have I Been Pwned. It's about 3.5 million. Average is about 1,100 people a day at the moment that have been signing up over the last 4 weeks. It'd be cool if the numbers changed. I think I'm going to get really, really sick of the audio very, very soon, so I don't think that's going to be sticking around. But this is kind of cool. And I was just playing with the developer tools where you can go through and define your icon. It is literally an 8x8 pixel icon, this one on the left. So I was doing like a little Have I Been Pwned one. And then you can set it up to poll an API endpoint at a frequency and just pull back whatever data you then want to display on here. It doesn't have to be numeric. It's in fact, I think you configure it literally as text. So this is... this is just kind of cool. It's USB powered as well. And what I'll do is just sort of sit it up here, I think, under one of the monitors somewhere. I might even mount it under the monitor. That would look cool. So I just don't even see any wires or anything other than the fact that there are buttons on the top too. If I rotate through this, that's the time just there. There's the weather. I had to figure out how to get that in Celsius. This is radio. Well, it obviously has a speaker because it's been ringing. I'm not sure that it'll really play radio from here. Stopwatch, countdown timer. And then we're back to, oh, look, someone rang. Did I go up or down? 173,590. I can't remember which way that's going. But anyway, so that is Lemetric. It was a bit pricey for what it is, if I'm honest. I think it was a couple of hundred bucks USD. But when I asked around, you know, like who knows of a panel like this, which, can, you know, you can plug into an API, there was lots of stuff that involved circuit boards and wiring things up yourselves or Arduinos or stuff, which, you know, hey, great, like some people love that. I really went on something that was turnkey, out of the box, and so far this looks pretty cool. So we'll see. Maybe by the time I do this next week, I'll have something useful on that. Now, as Tom said, 5 o'clock, beer o'clock. So, yes, it has just passed 5 o'clock. Look at the other comments here. Dremon says, I might get one for Bitcoin price feed. Yes. I don't know. Do you want to see Bitcoin price at the moment? It's a bit, is it exciting or depressing? I can't remember what it's done today. But there is already an app integration to do that. So there's a whole bunch of apps which have integrations into things like BTC prices or YouTube follower accounts, just all sorts of different things. The Twitter one was built in. I did actually link it to my Twitter account, and I was like, what permissions does it have? All right, not too bad. And then I realized that all you need to do is just put in a Twitter handle because, of course, a follower account is public data anyway. So there are apps to do all of those things. Tom's unfollowed, waited 30 seconds and followed, no update. So I don't know how long the polling period is for the Twitter app. What I do know is if I look at their developer environment now, when you set up your own app, the poll frequency can be 5 seconds, 15 seconds, 30 seconds, 1 minute, 10 minutes, 30 minutes, 1 hour. From memory, the Twitter API does have a polling limit on it. So not sure what's happening behind the back end of this app in order to ensure that there's a limit on that. But anyway, I'm not going to have the Twitter follow account up there because, frankly, I don't pay too much attention to that anyway. What else is here in the comments? Yeah, just a few people here saying the polling is slow. So if I go back to it now, what was it before? It was 96. Oh, there's ring ring. 173,593. There you go. Anyway, that's Lemetric. It's kind of cool for what it is. I'm okay with that. All right, now, getting into dedicated InfoSec stuff, and I've got three things I wanted to talk about today. And I'm going to start with something that I mentioned last week, which I just don't think I can put this delicately. So I'm going to just read through the. Let's start with the headline, and then I'll just pick certain parts of the story here. Here we go. A hacker remotely penetrated Bluetooth chastity belts, demanding victims pay ransom. Now, this is a follow-up to a piece of research a mate of mine, Ken Munro from Pentest Partners in the UK, did some weeks ago where he showed a Bluetooth chastity belt. Now, if you're not familiar with the concept of a chastity belt, best go and look at Ken's write-up. I believe he used a cucumber as a means of demonstrating it, so you can let your imagination run wild with that. There's a part of this which is it is funny because it's literally something that you're meant to strap around yourself so that you can't engage in sexual activity. Now, okay, that's some people are into that. Whatever, that's your thing. You go and do your thing. If we're not careful about the way we say this, people get very upset and say you're shaming people for fetishes or things like that. I honestly don't care what you do with your equipment. I would be worried about tracking it. Not even tracking, I think trapping it is the right word, with anything that is Bluetooth enabled. So Ken found vulnerabilities, which were a bit of a concern. But what seems to have actually happened here is someone has taken that research and they're locking these devices and demanding a ransom. A hacker managed to use ransomware to control an internet-enabled male chastity device via its Bluetooth function. Users were reportedly locked into the devices and asked to pay a ransom in Bitcoin in order to be freed. Think about that, because for most people, they've got to figure out how Bitcoin works whilst they're entrapped, right, at the same time. Wow. According to Pentest Partners, this goes back to Ken again, the API endpoints were unauthorized and used only medium-sized member codes, but using a shorter friend code managed to return a huge amount of personal information about the user. Users found themselves permanently locked into their chastity devices with no option of escape via their connected app. The hacker then mocked the victims and asked them to pay 0.2 bitcoins. It was about $270 at the time of the attacks, or be locked in permanently. Now, I'm sure it wouldn't be permanent. Like, there'd be ways, right? But is it like bolt cutters? Do you call the fire brigade? Like, how do you get out of that? After complaints came in, this bloke, I'd say there's a Chinese name I cannot pronounce, posted a video showing users how to manually unscrew the lock with a screwdriver. Another option was to contact support and ask them to unlock and reset the device remotely. It's also been reported that apparently none of the victims ended up paying the ransom. Well, that's good news. Well, okay. So in case you thought 2021 couldn't get any weirder, we had that to kick off on. Now, you know, again, look, I think the stigmatization of this sort of thing aside, it's just fascinating how much stuff we have connected and we have made dependent on things that happen digitally. I just think that this is an amazing time, and maybe I'll just take a much needed sip of beer and read what the comments are saying. Yeah, that's not terrifying at all. The mind boggles. I honestly can't stop laughing. I mean, why? I tried to be serious about it. Like, I honestly tried to be serious about it. Maybe I got halfway there. Let's move on to something more serious. Ubiquity. So Ubiquity has had a data breach. Now, someone raised this last week, but as I said, I basically left all of the normal stuff out of there last week. Let's talk about Ubiquity, because this does bug me, and I'm going to explain why. So my house is like full of Ubiquity stuff. I literally have shelves and shelves of Ubiquity equipment there, in part because I spent thousands of dollars buying Ubiquity stuff many years ago, and then subsequently in part because they have sent me a lot of things. And I've said many times before, Ubiquity do send me things. There is no expectation of blog posts or things. Like, every now and then someone wants to send you something and they're like, yeah, and then you'll write something really nice about it. It's like, mate, I don't know. Like, is it going to be something that I would go out and buy anyway, that I'd be endorsed in, and then I will continue to say the things that I want? Anyway, Ubiquity is amazing gear. And for people listening to this that have gone out, and many people have spent money with Ubiquity based on my recommendation as well, they'll know that it's good equipment. Now, they had this breach, and I'm just going to read you what was in the breach notification. Now, I shared this tweet, where are we, 10 days ago now. This is how far back we go. And, in fact, I quote tweeted Krebs here. So Krebs was probably about the first instance I saw of this. Right at the same time, I got literally dozens of emails from people sending me breach notifications and loads of tweets about it. Now, their notification is three short paragraphs. Dear customer, we recently became aware of an unauthorized access to certain of our information technology systems. Now, let me read that again, because I didn't read that incorrectly. This is how it's written. We recently became aware of unauthorized access to certain of our information technology systems. Like, the first line is typoed. Certain of our information technology systems hosted by a third-party cloud provider. We have no indication that there has been unauthorized activity with respect to any user's account. Now, this is a pretty normal part of a breach disclosure notice where someone will say, hey, something bad has happened. We don't have any evidence of people abusing it. Now, this is probably right. I think it would be very, very risky to say that if they did have evidence of people abusing it. But it also, of course, raises the question of, okay, well, would you know if they were abusing it? What would evidence of this look like? Now, depending on what it is that's been disclosed, evidence that might look like mass account takeovers. All right, good example, because there were credentials exposed by the sound of it. But it is a little bit of a worrying line. Now, they go on and they say, look, we're not aware of any evidence or access to any databases or host user data, but we cannot be certain that user data has not been exposed. And this is where it's a bit wishy-washy. I'll read this again. We are not currently aware of evidence of access to any databases that host user data, but we cannot be certain that user data has not been exposed. So, like, maybe your data was exposed, but we're not sure. This data may include your name, email address, and one-way encrypted password to your account. And just before you get upset about them saying encrypted, they do then say in brackets, in technical terms, the passwords are hashed and salted. Okay, I appreciate that clarification. They don't tell you what hashing algorithm, which kind of makes this... It's a difficult statement to do anything with, because if it's salted MD5, you're screwed. If it's bcrypt with a high work factor, okay, you're pretty solid. The data may also include your address and phone number if you have provided to us. As a precaution, we encourage you to change your password. We recommend you also change the password on any website. Use the same user ID or password. Finally, we recommend you enable two-factor authentication, and so on and so forth. And that's really all that's in there. And to me, this was a concerning message for a couple of reasons. Number one, starts with a typo. Like how many people have read this if it starts with a typo? Number two, it's very, very light on information, because when we talk about a third party, right? So they're saying that it was first sentence, third party. Information technology systems hosted by a third party cloud provider. So is it their systems on the cloud provider, who was the cloud provider? How, like, for example, if they said, look, we had an open S3 bucket, someone got into our data, you go, okay, all right, not good, but at least I understand what's happened. And I appreciate, well, I was going to say breach disclosure messages only go to the masses, but this is going to people who are normally going to be like IT pros. So I do think they could have been a lot more detailed here. The concern I have here is that there's a lot of detail missing. Other people have raised a concern that Ubiquity has been driving people towards cloud-based authentication to manage their network infrastructure. Now, I can see why you'd do that. I love the fact that I can manage my network from a remote location. But I know that people are being critical prior to this. Now, does this mean that people can get access to your network configuration? Does this mean that people can get access to your Protect cameras? That'd be possibly even more concerning, depending on what your cameras are pointing at. Incidentally, another reason why every single one of my cameras points at somewhere that wouldn't cause me embarrassment if it was seen by other people. Like, it's pointing outside to places you can see from the street. So, look, I just feel that this has fallen well short of expectation for breach disclosure notices. Now, I did contact Ubiquity, and I did say words to the effect of, we have a good relationship. This is what I do. Can I please help you with your messaging? And I have not had a reply on that. And that is disappointing. So I feel that they should have done better with that, and I feel that they should have actually taken a bit of advice on board there. Now, what's the actual impact of this? I don't know, because they haven't provided the information. Certainly, I haven't heard of like large-scale reports of people saying, hey, my network just got owned. I guess if they've got hashes and people have got, and it's a decent hashing algorithm and people have got decent passwords, then you, okay, that's going to severely limit it. And then, of course, if you've got 2FA and there's no sort of bypasses by having these credentials, well, then that severely limits it even more. And then this is vague enough to sound like maybe people didn't get the data. But again, it's like we're hands up in the air here, not knowing what's happened. I got one of these emails as well. I have had no follow-up email. So one of the things that the companies that I often advise, and to be clear, I don't think I've ever made a cent advising anyone on how to handle data breaches. I've just passed 500 of them, which I've loaded into Have I Been Pwned, and I've spoken to dozens and dozens and dozens, if not 100-plus companies, about how to craft their messages. And I've always said, yeah, you do need to follow up on this, because at the moment, like, this just sits there and people are like, okay, well, what happened, you know? So I love the equipment. They should have done a better job with the disclosure. And I hope I do hear more from them, not necessarily to me personally, but to everyone being impacted in the near future. All right, rant over. Looking at the notes here. Okay, UI really dropped the ball on this one, especially with a lot of their stuff starting to require the cloud services. Other people commenting on me supporting Ubiquity, yeah, which is fair. They also did not tell people to reset their 2FA token, but they should. Well, what would cause them to need to tell people to reset their 2FA token? It would be if the seed for the token had been exposed somewhere, which doesn't tend to happen in breaches of this nature. But you know what I would have liked to have seen? It's like, if you don't need to reset your 2FA tokens, why not? Wouldn't it be nice? So they had a little power in there saying, we really strongly encourage you to use 2FA. There is no seed material used in the generation of 2FA tokens that could have possibly been exposed because they're isolated in a completely different system, run independently by a different third party. This is why we're not telling you to do that. Good on you. Okay, now we understand why. And again, like, transparency just goes a really, really long way with this stuff. Tom, it's worth bearing in mind that what you see publicly is a single message that has had 10 plus opinions in its crafting. I'll tell you what, mate, it wasn't 10 plus people who read the first sentence. Otherwise, someone would have picked up that missing word. And actually, let's embellish on this point a bit. Very often, breach disclosure messages are prepared by, or at least have a lot of input by, lawyers sitting around a room. And I've had firsthand experience with this, where I've seen how long it's been taking to prepare disclosure messages, and I've spoken to people on the inside, and I remember one in particular, and it was a good mate of mine. He's like, look, the room is just full of people in suits figuring out how to minimize damage. So I'm sure there was at least some degree of that here as well. There kind of has to be. Follow-up doesn't sound good, all of that. Marcus, sorry I'm late. Look, we were waiting for you, but we just Kidding. Move on. All right. So look, that's actually one other question here from Per. I have Unified products, but haven't received an email. Living in Sweden, was it a regional breach? I don't believe it was regional because people all over the world have reported this. And as far as I know, the UI.com service, assuming this is maybe saying UI.com service is the wrong word, but the repository of credentials, I believe, is one globally. So maybe check your junk on that as well. And look, if you want to see how many people reported this, just Google, go to Twitter, search for Troy Hunt Ubiquity, because I did that when I was looking for this notice and I saw so many other notices in there. Richard, what was the recommended action for users? The recommended action was to change your password. Don't use the same password other places. If you do, change it there. And make sure you've got two-factor enabled. And that's it. And look, to be honest, if you've got a decent password, like a randomly generated one, using this week's sponsor, 1Password, you're going to be pretty solid anyway. You'd literally have to have the thing stored in plain text, which at least that's one bit of detail I provided here. That wasn't the case. Okay, now last thing as well, and I need to wrap this up kind of shortly. Last week I spoke about Parler and Gab. Now, Parler has come back online with a holding page. Let's just see if that's still there. Parler.com. The technical difficulties. Now seems like the right time to remind you, both lovers and haters, that why we started this platform, privacy, blah, 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 blah. We hope we'll be back soon. So they're basically still on the fence. There's a bunch of tweets and things that went around a few days ago about them using a Russian DDoS provider and then effectively saying, well, look, all your traffic now in one way routes through infrastructure and control of the Russians. Apparently that's worse than being in control of the Americans. So, but an interesting observation given the political nature of it. So that's interesting there. They have been very upset with Amazon, bringing a case against Amazon for effectively unfairly cancelling their service. I think that they've got just about no chance in hell of getting anywhere with that, given that their own lawyers fired them as well. So I'm not sure who's running their legal case now, but you wouldn't want to be going up against Amazon, would you? You'd want to have a really watertight case to think you could take them on. So that's Parler. They're sitting there in limbo. But hey, at least they got a holding page up. The domain was just basically just not resolving DNS when they first got kicked off Amazon. The other one, of course, is Gab. So Gab, checking your browser before accessing gab.com, obviously still sitting on Cloudflare. I said last week I'd give it 50-50 that Cloudflare would keep them on, and I think that they'd need a lot of public pressure to knock them off. Obviously, Cloudflare has kept them on. So before the really kind of right-leaning folks jump up and down and say I was wrong, I said 50-50. I hedged my bets completely equally here. So they're still there. Now, of course, we do have a new president in the US now. That transition has gone peacefully by the look of it. But looking at it here, particularly the CEO of Gab, he really doesn't like Democrats, because this is what keeps coming up in the Twitter feed. Because when you join, not the Twitter feed, the Gab feed, when you join Gab, you are automatically following Trump and the Gab CEO. And the Gab CEO is very, very pro-Trump. Oh, he did retweet a photo of a nice beagle. So that's okay, kudos for that. And then you get back into the politics. And the rest of that, it's very, very politics and very, very evangelical as well. That's what you notice there. Now, Gab, to their credit, like it's not only up, but the thing is staying up and the performance actually seems to be okay. Now, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the longer time, because running your own infrastructure ain't cheap at all, and they have a lot of it, and I'm not quite sure how they're monetizing it all, and particularly as we get past this sort of change of office and everything calms down a little bit, I wonder if people sort of lose a bit of interest and there might not be the same influx of money that they would have to be getting in spades at the moment just to keep the thing alive. So who knows what the future will be. There's just notice here, there's one from 2 hours ago. He's tweeted a meme, just a meme about big tech. And about how evil big tech is, but yeah. Oh, geez. It is worthwhile, I've said this before, it's worthwhile joining Gab and just flicking through it just to just to get a little bit of a sense of the what for most of us would be considered the other side. Okay, so look, that's pretty much what I had to cover today. I hope you found that interesting. We had a good range of stuff there, everything from potential jet ski accidents through to chastity belts being ransomed off for people and a bit of gab at the end of it as well. So thank you very much for watching. Next week, I got no idea what I'm going to be doing between now and next week. There is actually something I'm working on, actually something completely different to everything I've done before. Now, maybe I'll talk about that next week. I'll see how I go with this over the coming days, but there's always something, and I'll catch you probably the morning side my time in a week from now. Thanks for watching.